Welcome to the Fast Mode podcast series. I'm Tara Neal, and with me today is Sebastian Pfeiffer, Managing Director at the Impossible Cloud Network, ICN. ICN is the ultimate cloud platform that connects enterprise-grade hardware with cloud service providers while leveraging SLA oracles for uncompromised performance or service quality. The ICN protocol powers a decentralized cloud architecture, seamlessly combining blockchain technology with traditional cloud services to deliver secure, scalable, and efficient global solutions. Sebastian is responsible for the oversight and execution of ICN's comprehensive strategy aimed at expanding the ecosystem. Previously, Sebastian was a consultant at Boston Consulting Group, BCG, developing and implementing strategies for global conglomerates with a focus on industrial goods sector and social impact. Sebastian joins us today as part of our exclusive editorial segment on the use of GenAI for network management. Welcome, Sebastian. Great to have you on today's episode.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me. Great to be on board.
Awesome. Okay, let's start. This kind of a basic question. We know cloud, okay, the cloud is quite a fluid concept. Can you share how this concept has evolved over the years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think cloud, everybody has this kind of concept in their mind. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knows. Mm-hmm. So happy to deep dive here.
Yes.
In simple terms, it's renting someone else's computer or mm-hmm. a more advanced version of that, right? So mm-hmm. if you use, for instance, iCloud, essentially you rent space from Apple or their partners mm-hmm. To store your picture on that, right? So mm-hmm. usually it's a B2B model, right? So mm-hmm. the majority of the industry is business driven. Mm-hmm. Why do these businesses or individuals choose to use cloud? Because it's scalable, right? It's flexible mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. essentially on demand. Now, without getting too technical, there's different abstractions on top of hardware, right? You can start bare metal, or you can start higher in the architecture with software services, right? Overall, just to give an understanding, it's one of the fastest growing markets for sure. 2024 was roughly more than 300 billion in terms of revenue. Mm-hmm. It's still growing quite fast. Mm-hmm. So we're at 30% and more, depending on the study you focus on. So in short, it's a very large market. And now to your question with regards to evolution, right? Also a very mm-hmm. interesting mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. I think we started with a few smaller services, right? Mm-hmm. Very basic needs. Now we're at a point where it's very individual, right? So mm-hmm. AWS has more than 200 services, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, they have a 30% market share. So we are at a point where it's highly individual to cater to anyone's needs. And it's very oligopolistic, right? It's very centralized in terms of only a few providers, right? Now, mm-hmm. however, we see cracks in this facade. And I think we'll talk about this in a minute, that mm-hmm. where decentralization, I think, is able to capture the profit from these cracks in the facade.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I think that summarized the concept very well, because we see a lot of concepts like private cloud, you know, and then we have cloud as a service, and then we have all sorts of hybrids, you know, that a lot of concepts that come out there as a lot of small players go into cloud services, and then they offer their own versions of their own flavors, you know, basically meeting all the niche demand that they see in the marketplace. So coming from what we have just discussed, we have heard these terms, and I think these terms are very relevant to you guys, decentralized cloud and also decentralized networks. So could you explain what these concepts are?
For sure. And I agree that it can be very confusing with these convoluted mm-hmm. terms, right? Mm-hmm. So let's unpack this. I think decentralization can have many levels. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So for simplicity, we can say it has a hardware and a software level, right? Mm-hmm. So for infrastructure, so the hardware side, mm-hmm. Usually it's a network of nodes. Mm-hmm. We at ICN, we call these scalar nodes, right? Mm-hmm. Because they scale according to the network. Mm-hmm. And these hardware nodes or scalar nodes, they make up this network. And what makes it special in decentralization is that they are not owned and operated by a single entity, right? So mm-hmm. AWS, for instance, they have roughly 30 data centers around the world, mm-hmm. owning them, right? Fully end to end. And that's where decentralization comes in and says, okay, we essentially make up individual of these nodes into a network. We aggregate these, right? Mm-hmm. Then why is this better? Maybe to touch upon that quickly, although we can also expand on that in much more detail, but on a high level, it makes scalability easier, right? Mm-hmm. So you can have edge performance as well. So why not have hundreds of nodes rather than just these 30, right? That becomes a possibility with decentralized ownership. Now, on the software stack, right, that's where the decentralization means that the stack is not owned by one entity, right? So in consequence, there is no silos. We at ICN, we call this composability, right? So where everyone can contribute services to these to the software layer, and opening up this software stack, right, making it accessible for everybody, allows for innovation, for combination of services, rather than having, again, one entity, a siloed stack that they fully own. Yeah? So the implications of all of this, Tara, is essentially it's permissionless, right? It's composable, and it's truly open. It's censorship resistant, and at the end of the day, you cannot switch off a decentralized system, right?
Okay, so what you're saying is that, you know, you talked about the software and the hardware layer. So basically, anyone can come in and rent out their hardware and join the network to, you know, to become part of the decentralized network. Is that what it essentially means?
So it kind of depends on the project, I would say. So for us, we have three different layers. If we talk about just the hardware layer, we kind of have a requirement, because we have a demand focus in terms of that it's specific to cater to certain needs, it can only be run out of enterprise grade data centers, right?
Okay.
So you can't, for us at least, you couldn't offer your laptop storage, for instance, right? You have to be co-located in data center. But there's different ways to contribute. I'm sure we'll touch upon those aspects, but for us, it needs to be a certain enterprise grade hardware. And however, there's projects, of course, I mean, that allow you to contribute basically with any hardware. And then there's other projects where you essentially purchase the hardware and then run it and for them and to mint tokens, right? There's different models. It depends on the token. But I think it's definitely something for everybody in this industry.
All right. Okay. So building on that, how do decentralized networks benefit both the enterprises and end users?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think, again, this kind of depends on the angle, right? So for ICN, we have very much a B2B angle, right? So our DNA is demand focused. So we look at enterprise markets mostly, right? So back to your question, why do they choose us? Where is the benefit, right? So I think that data sovereignty is of course a major purchasing criterion, right? No single entity should be in charge dictating these terms, right? So like the political landscape or not, that's currently arising, right? It's that a great idea to have a single person or an entity gating content. Again, regardless of who this person is, if you like them or not, I don't think that's a great idea. So for customers, of course, censorship resistance is a major factor. But it can also be more tangible than this principle-based argument. So what decentralized cloud allows at the end of the day is real competition, right? So on a service level. Because we make it open and composable, everyone can very easily launch their service and combine it with already existing services, right? So for instance, we have an S3 object storage solution. So if you want to build an AI agent on top of that that needs a high-performance data storage, you could do that, right? Because, again, it's open and permissionless.
Yes.
So you could already use existing products from other companies and then combine them. At the end of the day, this opens up for innovation. Really difficult with centralized providers. Then a third aspect I would mention is edge performance, right? I mean, I shortly touched upon that aspect already. When you have a decentralized network, meaning a community of individuals contributing to this, you're much more flexible with regards to size and where these are located. Yeah? So edge performance, meaning performance close to where you are, and geographical proximity, which, by the way, is with AI, is becoming an increasingly important criterion. This becomes more easily available with decentralized networks. And then lastly, maybe a very foundational argument is simply because we can serve the demand, right? So AWS, I mean, I keep mentioning this name because, again, they're one of the biggest ones. They said that this year alone, they will invest $100 billion into the infrastructure, right? So that's a really, really large number. Mm-hmm. It's incredible when if you think about it. Mm-hmm. And yet, that same AWS said that they won't be able to serve their entire demand, right? Because the demand is simply too big and they cannot keep up with it. Now, guess where that demand is going to go, right? Our DNA at ICN is very much on a service level, right? We come from a product side. We said, okay, let's build a working product first before bootstrapping the network, right? Mm-hmm. So we built Web3 advantages without sacrificing performance, right? Mm-hmm. So we always say any service that builds on top of us needs to be at least as performant as a traditional cloud, right? So meaning that I would say it's not entirely unlikely that some of that spillover is going to take place into the decentralized networks such as ours or any other Web3 projects.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know that decentralized networks are touted for the ability to power Web3. So can you explain more on that? And, you know, and at the same time, how do they address some of the challenges, you know, in this space?
Yeah, it's also a very, very good question. I think that this is where DePIN has its strength, right? So DePIN, decentralized physical infrastructure, it's essentially these networks that, like telecom, energy, or for us, cloud, they are usually natural monopolies or oligopolies, right? So very centralized and sometimes even overseen by complex government regulation. Now, all of this creates little incentive for innovation, right? I keep coming back to this. So customer experience is not the best. Over time, the UI may be and suboptimal. There's different factors, right? I think DePIN can do better than that. The decentralization of physical infrastructure, it offers an opportunity to overcome these incumbent monopolies. Right, so it can create networks that are more robust, more transparent, and offer more room for this innovation. Right, so three things that stand out here is, I would say, flexible capacity, better scalability, and this innovation that I mentioned before already. Right, so what we see at Impossible Cloud Network, or ICN, is that all of these above hold true, but again, this needs to be built in conjunction with demand. Yeah, what do I mean by this? So just to scale a network is, don't get me wrong, it's an achievement already. But in the long term, we believe that building a demand-specific or use case-oriented network is key. Yeah? So that's why we, for instance, we started with S3, object storage. I think that in and of itself is already, can become a great, great project. But we did this because it has the strongest data gravity. What do I mean by this? Essentially, this concept of when you start with data, it's much easier to build services on top of that, right? To scale with a service landscape. And this is also, by the way, where last aspect on your question here is where community can come in, right? Mm-hmm. Community is key because they have the pulse on this industry, right? So they are essentially the key element in building all of this. And that's another key strength. How decentralized networks power Web3, right? It's all driven by community because they're all in it in a decentralized way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking, are there any cost benefits as well for enterprises using your service?
Right, of course, cost is always an argument, right? So for us, we are roughly 80% cheap, or at least our service provider, the first one that built on top of us, is 80% cheaper than traditional cloud, right? But I wouldn't raise price as the key criterion. Why? Because at the end of the day, if you buy something because it's cheaper, I think it lacks a bit of how do I put this? It's too easy, right? So if you buy a car and it's 80% cheaper than a BMW, you would say, okay, what's the catch, right? So you need to be at least as performant as traditional cloud, potentially offer benefits. I mean, I mentioned a few already, and then cheaper, right? I think that should be in the argumentation, should always be the last one when you try to sell.
Wow, okay. So coming back to ICN, what you guys do, right? So what is this thing called the ICN protocol, and what technologies do you bring to the decentralized cloud space?
Right, so what we try to do is build a permissionless, composable, and truly open ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we allow anyone to contribute essentially across three components. So mm-hmm. starting with the hardware layer, I mentioned mm-hmm. this already briefly, enterprise-grade hardware, demand focus, right? So it needs mm-hmm. to be, it needs to tackle a demand problem that's mm-hmm. there, right? So that's number one, enterprise-grade hardware. The second element where anyone really can contribute is the service layer, right? So mm-hmm. anyone can essentially build custom services on top of this hardware layer, combining mm-hmm. with services that are already there. That's where the mm-hmm. composability comes in. Mm-hmm. So either hardware, service, or you could run what we call hypernodes. Essentially, these are nodes that ensure the network's integrity, the security of the network, right? So this is for anyone to contribute in this growing ecosystem. Now, here's where the protocol comes in, right? The mm-hmm. protocol facilitates all of this. It matches what type of hardware, the service, mm-hmm. and the integrity/security by these hypernodes. I think what makes us unique mm-hmm. also is that we view this as a step-by-step approach. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I think that Web3 is a fantastic industry. I mean, I come from management consulting, so it's quite different, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's very dynamic, a lot of smart people, and driven by great ideas and, mm-hmm. and thoughts and visions. But it's not fully there. It doesn't fully deliver upon its promises, I would say, right? Mm-hmm. So other Web3 typical features mm-hmm. we see as at a later point in time as part of the network. That doesn't mean we exclude them. Of course, we will include them. But we mm-hmm. say, let's view this as a step-by-step approach. Let's take what's great, what's already there, and then mm-hmm. build on top of that. Let's do one thing right and then expand.
Mm-hmm. So basically what you're saying is that the protocol enables vendors with different solutions to be able to integrate their solutions on a common platform. Is that what the protocol does?
Yes, that's 100% correct. And since this is very B2B focused, right? Mm-hmm. How does the average user interact, right? Again, you mm-hmm. can contribute any mm-hmm. of those hardware nodes. You can build a service on top if you're or vendor, as you put it, right? Technically, mm-hmm. this can be a developer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Or you run these hyper nodes that ensure mm-hmm. the system's security.
Mm-hmm. And for someone who's not in, you know, whose products are not compliant to the protocol as yet, do they have to do like massive tweaks to their solution to be able to be part of this?
Well, I would say we're planning to launch in mm-hmm. Q2. Mm-hmm. So anyone that wants to build on top of this, right, that finds mm-hmm. this interesting, mm-hmm. do feel free to reach out. I do think that, especially in this time, it's crucial to combine forces, right, and expand rapidly. So mm-hmm. Very, very much happy to accustom any services that are out there and try to make it work for the network.
Okay, I see. So it requires a lot of collaboration between different players.
I mean, that's what decentralization is all about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's mm-hmm. I think it's a win-win-win for everyone, especially what we try to build. The market is big enough to basically accompany numerous amounts of projects. Mm-hmm. And I think we're on a good path already. I think we have roughly close to 5 million recurring revenue already. And it's growing quite nicely. So I think we have like this product market fit achieved. Now it's just about scaling and expanding with new services, as well as scaling the existing services that we already have.
Mm-hmm. And which verticals do you see this demand coming from, especially in the coming months?
Right, so right now, the product that's offered in our ecosystem is an mm-hmm. S3 object storage solution. Mm-hmm. So, of course, this is very storage heavy, right?
Yeah.
I think where the actual where the expansion is coming from, the momentum will be coming from, mm-hmm. is when you combine different services, right? So everybody talks about AI, right?
Yeah.
So if you put AI agents on top of this, if you put a database on top of mm-hmm. this, I think, again, coming from the data gravity argument, meaning mm-hmm. you have the data already, now you just need to build on top of this, that's what, again, makes us unique and I think puts us in a great position to expand quickly, again, after the launch in Q2.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think, you know, you covered quite a bit of stuff there. These are new concepts, and I guess for anyone listening it for the first time, you need to, I think, take some time to digest all this. But nevertheless, it's very interesting. It's about openness at the end of the day, and about, you know, expanding opportunities to both vendors as well as enterprises who might be looking for more flexible architectures to expand and to scale their workloads, right? So I think these are excellent insights. So thank you, Sebastian, for joining us today in this session.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed this. And again, to the audience listening in, feel free to reach out. And looking forward to the launch in Q2.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So to everyone tuning in, thank you guys for listening. So if you want to learn more, visit www.icn.global and follow us for more insights and updates as we continue to uncover the latest in technology and telecommunications. See you in our next session. Bye-bye.